following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome to It Came From The Radio. My name is Alan Rothman, and I'm a guest host for the Vacationing Mark Torres. I'm here with our regular co-host, Charlie Saladino.
How's everybody?
And a special guest, Jessica Rothman.
Good evening.
Charlie, what's doing in the news?
Well, first of all, let's tell everybody, if they're having trouble listening to us, they can go online to AM 1240 WGBB.com, and that's our official website. Also, you can hear us live on there, or if they want to call in, the number is 631-888-8811. Call in, ask us questions, and hopefully we'll answer you. Mark is on the planet Gwal. He's proton blasting rhinoplasties, and he sent me the news. God bless him. But anyway, let's start off with the news right away. Canadian inventor Raymond Lee has come up with a new kind of jetpack that is water-powered and will allow the flyer to hover 30 feet in the air and zoom at a speed up to 22 miles per hour. The contraption should be available this summer for a mere $136,000, $136,000. This may start a trend. Before flying cars, we'll have flying people.
We can have that in next year's Heimlich Schlemmer Christmas catalog.
Yes.
You know, having grown up in the plumbing and heating supply business, I could tell you that's got to be impossible at any cost. There's not enough water power to pump up to lift someone off this earth. But we'll see. If Mark found it, then it must be true.
But could you imagine?
Let's go with the rocket, man.
Yeah. Captain Kids. Remember Captain Kids?
Captain H2O.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Captain Video is also known for a rocket pack.
Right. Yeah. There you go. But I'm thinking you would have to get some, what is that, the FCC? No, that's us, the FCC. What's the
Federal Trade Commission?
No, the Fair Aeronautics.
The FAA.
FAA, yeah, thank you. Right. I knew it was one of those things. But everyone would have to have flying lessons. And soloing lessons and piloting lessons.
And probably swimming lessons, too, yeah. If they're using that much water.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. All right. Moving on. Former Bond girl and X-Men star Famke Janssen has been signed to star, get ready for this, folks, star in a Hansel and Gretel action comedy that depicts the fairy tale pair as bounty hunters. The Paramount project, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, picks up years after the siblings' childhood trauma at the gingerbread house. Famke will play the leader of the witches. Wow. There you go. Can you imagine that? They're bounty hunters. They're hunting witches because they were traumatized by them.
Who writes this stuff?
Whoever writes it makes money. I don't know.
And as long as the advertisers are happy, I guess that's okay. Hansel and Gretel, okay, bounty hunters, sure.
Once again, giving the Wiccans a bad name. But anyway, yeah, that should be fun. I mean, could you imagine that, bounty hunters? It's a good idea. I'm thinking it's a good idea. I think it'll work because it's so insane.
I could see Hansel standing in his lederhosen on top of the hill, like a spaghetti western, wide open scene, and he's looking around for the witch. Yeah. Is she going to be up in the sky like in The Wizard of Oz, or is she going to be coming out of the ground?
It's like one of the, do you feel lucky?
Boom!
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's scary, though. But I can see it happening, you know. Hansel, dog, the bounty hunter. You know, I don't know. But
yeah, and Gunmall Gretel.
Yeah,
Dave. You gotta love it.
Yeah.
As long as it's on the air at 3 a.m. to compete with all the old spaghetti westerns, I guess we can tolerate it, right?
Yeah, I guess
Gingerbread and guns. Are you ready?
In 3D. They didn't say that. Why don't they make something like this in 3D?
The wand versus the Luger.
Yeah. Could you imagine if they have some, like, gingerbread weapon? That would be excellent.
Like, now, I know what you're thinking, punk. Did she fire 6 gumdrops or only 5? Well, let me tell you, in the past action, I sort of lost track myself. So you got to ask yourself this question. Do you feel like you have good dental insurance?
There you go. Da-da-boom.
And could you imagine if she actually got shot? That would really be a crummy production because there'd be crumbs all over the place.
Oh, wait a minute. Stop it. That was illegal almost. All right. Moving on, Julia Roberts has closed a deal to star as Evil Queen in one of 3 Snow White projects that are in the works. Her film is not the Disney version, which will star Kristen Stewart from the Twilight movies, but they're doing one of those. I can't believe this is like beating a dead horse. But Julia Roberts will be the Evil Queen. What do you feel about that? Is she evil enough?
I don't know if she's evil enough. She probably can because she's a good actor and she probably can then create any type of character. What I'm concerned about is that without her, with the script itself, you know, with the writer, are the writers writing something that's worthwhile seeing, putting words into Julia Roberts' mouth? I don't know, maybe a big waste of time, but we shall see.
Well, it also says she's just starring in one of the 3 Snow White projects that are coming out. So obviously we don't know who's starring in the other 2, but 3 projects.
Now, truthfully, as a fairy tale, Snow White is ripe to be redone. Because if you go back and you look at the original Disney version, while it's beautifully animated and has wonderful songs and all that, the character of Snow White as portrayed in today's modern light is almost insulting. She's like a child woman. A little girl in a woman's body whose first impulse at just about everything is to run away. So you could rework that one very, very easy, probably by going back to the original fairy tales, which if you ever do, they're often not at all like the bolderized versions we have today. They're often kind of bloody and with people getting their feet chopped off and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like a Robert Rodriguez version of Snow White. I'd like to see that.
I'd like to see this in the hands of Tim Burton. Because, truthfully, if you look at any of the Disney versions of the fairy tales, the really rich characters are the villains, particularly the female villains.
Right.
And
I'll get you my pretty.
I know that's not Disney.
That's a little un-Disney-ish. But Burton handles the dark side so well that it would be very interesting. And I think it's a little bit of a stretch based on what Roberts has done before, but I've got to give her props for attempting it, because I think it might be a great thing for her.
It also if Tim Burton does it, we would have to worry if he could get Johnny Depp to star in it. Because, Tim and Johnny, they're like...
Well, he can play all 7 dwarves.
Yes. He can. Good point.
He can.
He is such a great actor. He can.
And with the makeup artist that they use, absolutely.
Actually, that would be like a phenomenal movie. I would go see that.
Lady Gaga as Snow White?
No, if they could do the 7 dwarfs and they'll all be Johnny Depp.
Absolutely.
Because I think he could get away with that. That would be phenomenal.
Yeah. Through the magic of technology in the cinema.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. In a related story, speaking about Disney, a quadriplegic man is suing Disneyland in federal court, alleging the theme park left him on the It's a Small World ride for 40 minutes after it stalled while the staff evacuated other passengers. The lawsuit alleges Disneyland violated the Americans with Disability Act because it didn't have proper procedures in place for evacuating disabled passengers from the ride. Disney says, and we quote from Disney, All riders are accessible to all guests. All rides are accessible to all guests, and the rides do have procedures in place to evacuate disabled customers. Okay. My question is, are the workers there able to evacuate? Are they trained to? I'm sure they are. I mean, but...
I would assume that they are simply, seriously, because there are many people with many different limited abilities that go to Disney World on a regular basis, so I'm sure they have to be trained. And Disney is probably about the best when it comes to dealing with humans in large crowds and situations as far as people moving and so on. But could you imagine if that fella had to sit there for 40 minutes listening to that soundtrack over and over again? That easily will convince a jury to give him a few million dollars.
Yeah. And also, you know, like in years to come, he'll be sitting just minding his own business in the park, and somebody will go, it's a small... And he'll get a rifle and jump on a tower someplace. And then, seriously. Yeah. I mean,
up on the tower, six dead, and Marine training is playing, you know. Quote the late, great
just the
Carlin.
Yeah.
But incidentally, you're right. Disney, before he planned out his theme park, he made the first large-scale study of crowds and crowds in action. He's still quoted as a known expert.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what he found out, one of his big feelings is people will put up with long lines if they can either see them visibly moving all the time, or if when they do move, they move for great distances before they stop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but Disney, they know, the guys here know how I feel about Disney. But as far as Walt, this man was way ahead of his time. He was a genius, in my opinion, and I just would give any amount of money if Walt, good old Walt, could come back and see what his vision spawned. I mean, and I'm sure he could clean up some of the bad stuff, but you know, this man was a genius.
It's the liability world after all.
Yeah, it is. You know, everybody got a lawyer. You know, 1-800-LAWYERS. They're open New Year's Eve at midnight. Yeah. I just did a commercial for them. Wow.
Keep in mind, though, that a lot of the practical stuff wasn't Walt. It was his brother who actually figured out how to run things on the business end.
That's true. That's true.
Do we know how Disneyland?
Roy Disney, that was his name.
Roy, that's right.
Roy. Disneyland got started. You know how that's... I'm sure...
Well, it was Walt's inspiration.
I know how it got started, though.
Well, I know Walt had an inspiration for his movies to come to life, and started working towards that end, and talked Roy into going along for the ride.
Right, and also at the Cartoon Factory, they decided to put a couple of rides right outside the Cartoon Factory, and those rides expanded and expanded and expanded. Next thing you know, we have this, what we have now.
Right, and they say that that in a way, Disneyland was a victim of its own success, since it got to be so popular, everyone bought up all the land around it and couldn't expand any further.
Right, exactly. Thus, Florida and Disney World.
Which is why Disney World is so large in Florida, because Disney bought up hundreds of thousands of acres, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, originally, his original vision was, in addition to the theme park, he was actually going to make a operating community of tomorrow, where people were actually going to live and work and basically live out their entire lives.
Yeah. And he so would have accomplished that. Epcot would have been a working community, I believe.
Right.
You know, so anyway, so that's what's going on in the news. Thank you, Mark, for not giving me a Bible like you did the last time. Last time, Mark gave me like 4 pages. And then after I told him about it, he says, no, you have to edit that to do what you want. It was like, thank you so much for the safety tip.
Mark, are you listening?
I can add one item to that.
Okay.
Yeah, I found out just yesterday that, believe it or not, they're going to, I was discussing this with Alan before the show started, they're going to bring back good old Mr. Magoo.
Oh!
Yeah, okay. Only this time, and here's the, you know, they're stepping away from the old canon. The old canon, he was a semi-retired, stagey type of Broadway actor.
Right.
And that set the stage for the first cartoon series and the later one, in which he actually went back to the theater, and he show was him acting out a classic novel like Frankenstein or a biography like Captain Kidd and so forth. And also it's what led to the famous Christmas special where he redid Charles Dickens, which incidentally still stands as one of the better interpretations, which says something about something which I don't care to think about too closely. But believe it or not, in the new version of Mr. Magoo, he's going to be, and I'm not making this up, I swear, a kung fu master. And he and his nephew, who's not the same nephew as was portrayed in the original series, Waldo, but someone else, I think his name is Fenton or something. They're making the rounds of a championship that mostly is being populated by evil, nasty supervillains. And it's Fenton's job to sort of point nearsighted Mr. Magoo in the right direction and presumably say something along the lines of destroy. And that's going to be the plot of it. Just going to the various championships and dealing all these supervillains who presumably will have different powers, I suppose, you know. Can't get away from that old anime manga influence anymore. Yeah. And that's how they're going to revive good old Mr. Magoo. Now, what I'm wondering is how they're going to, because if you recall, when they made the movie, they got a lot of protests from the Society for Society for the Blind and that sort of thing. But the other side of the coin was Magoo was never supposed to be blind. He was supposed to be nearsighted and too vain to wear glasses.
Yeah. Well, now with LASIK surgery, you know, there's no excuse. What are they going to call that? Kung Fu Magoo?
I believe they are.
There you go.
You can't make this stuff up.
I just took a wild shot at that, Tom.
I think what it comes down to is the business of the arts, and there is the arts and there's the business, and they'll keep trying and investing money in various types of ideas, whether they're new or dredged up from the past, and to see until they finally get something that works, meaning it sells advertising and sells tickets.
Well, the old saying goes, it's show business, not show art.
That's right.
Yeah. And as you would put it, you throw enough mud on the wall, something will stick.
There you go.
And something I never thought might take off, and I saw the trailer for it, and I'm saying this might make money. Cowboys and Aliens. It was like,
yeah, most people thought it was a joke, but yeah, now more and more buzz.
Yeah, yeah, but
I'm actually looking forward to that one. I saw the trailer for that.
Yeah.
When I went to see some film recently. I don't go too frequently. I'm kind of a Netflix kind of chick, you know. But the concept is great because the science fiction films like Star Wars and Aliens, those were the modern cowboy movies.
Right.
So you might as well just throw them together and just see what flies.
Yeah. Well, if I remember, one of the big pushes in the 60s to create new ideas for programs was taking two popular types of shows. For example, spy and Western, and putting together, we got Wild Wild West. In one of my writing classes, students put together two different programs about Little House on the Prairie and Moving Up, and they called it Little House in the Ghetto. It was an hysterical script, but it was only high school students, so we didn't have a way to promote it and make some money on it. But sure, why not? Put together two popular genres and see what flies.
They've put together cowboys and monster movies. The Creature from the Hollow Hill was one of them.
Absolutely.
And then they had some real low budget stinkers like Billy the Kid Meets Dracula and that sort of thing. Best Left Forgotten.
Yeah, those were one of them. Remember we were talking about that? I think you and I were the only ones who saw that. I mean, not in the world, but I mean out of the group that was here. All these young kids that we work with.
You mean Billy the Kid never met Rodan instead? Oh, what a disappointment.
No. He would. Well, when you look at it, it's like you were saying, yeah, let's mix up two things. In fact, Wild Wild West, as I said last week, I believe last week, was my favorite show.
Absolutely.
Loved it.
One of the fathers of steampunk.
So what was that?
It was one of the fathers of the steampunk movement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's out of my league. I have no idea
steampunk. Very basically, steampunk is the future as Jules Verne would have imagined it. It's a very hot subgenre of science fiction these days.
Yeah. So anyway, having said that, are we ready for our first break or what?
Oh, sure. Although I would bring up one other thing about mixing the genres. That comic book from the 60s, Weird West, which mixed which mixed supernatural for the, and fantasy with the with westerns.
Yeah.
And incidentally, just and this is totally unplanned. Our music break is going to, so in a way, sort of fall into that, and I'll explain it when we get back.
Don't never admit anything's luck, Tom.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
The stars are new in the making. It's time to fly. Deep space is calling you. Go far, go wild, go lonely. New worlds are there for the taking. I'm set to go. Let's travel, just we two.
Hot. Now, back to our show.
And we're back with It Came From the Radio. And today's show, Alan has brought us a topic. And Alan and Jessica will run with this topic. I think it's a very good topic, and I think we'll have a good show. And take it away, Alan and Jessica.
Okay, thanks, Charlie. Tonight I'd like to explore a rarely discussed topic regarding comic book characters. Like so many other pop culture icons, comic book characters have appeared in many media formats. Superman, for example, has been on television, on the radio, in the movies. I have an LP album at home, other recordings. And yes, even in Broadway, on Broadway. In 1966, there was a production called, ready for this, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's...
Superman.
I thought it was a trick question, Alan. That's why I didn't answer. Go ahead.
You did that very well, though.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, our flying superhero crashed. It was not a long-running musical. I think it ran about 190 performances.
19 previews, 129 performances.
129. I'm guessing dyslexic. I got the numbers backwards. But more about that shortly. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about my special guest this evening, somebody who I know very well, and you probably figured out already based on the similarity of last names. Jessica Roth has been a theater educator for more than 35 years. She has written educational materials and has consulted on a number of Broadway shows, has directed many off Broadway productions, and has acted in television and film. Countless numbers of her former students have gone on to careers on the Broadway stage and other performing arts. Many of them are listening tonight, we hope. In short, Jessica is a walking encyclopedia of the Broadway industry. We will be walking around in the theater district, and most people will say, oh, look, that's a famous actor. What's his name? What's her name? She'll know who the lighting designer is who's walking down 48th Street or 49th Street. So welcome again, Jessica. Tonight's topic is going to be, should Broadway shows be produced based on characters from comics, superheroes and others? What do you think?
Well, I think Broadway shows should be based on anything. You know, we had Broadway shows based not only on superheroes, but we had them on, if you want our genre here, we had them on science fiction characters. Dracula, Phantom of the Opera, and like that. I just think it's a normal progression for superheroes. But Broadway shows should have carte blanche to do anything they want. And in Spider-Man's case, do it rather quickly instead of... that's neither here or there, but yeah, I do believe they should be on Broadway. Give the masses something to see.
Well, then I guess you answered the question. The show is over. Thank you. No,
no.
Obviously, we wanted to delve into it much more deeply, but I agree with most of what you're saying. Specifically, let's start with Spider-Man. Spider-Man was a successful series of movies, very successful, as a matter of fact. Why not the success of a Broadway show, Spider-Man? Jessica?
I haven't seen the production itself. I did see a presentation about 2 years ago, which was highly anticipated. I had seen many years ago, I'd went to a presentation prior to the production of The Lion King, and it was an outstanding production. And it was very exciting. You have Julie Taymor, who's... reputation is great. You have Bono and the Edge, who have a huge audience for music, and you've got essentially a really good story, the story of Spider-Man. It's a morality story. It's talking about responsibility. I don't know the exact phrase, but I believe it's with great power comes great responsibility. And something for the guys for a change. You know, it's kind of the answer to Wicked. So we were really looking forward to it. And it was, the presentation was a snooze. And I was very, very worried about it from then. And from people who have seen it, who I trust, who said it was dreadful. And then the critics have said it is dreadful. And it's $65 million of, we're not quite sure what's going on stage. The potential for Spider-Man is great, but they haven't really developed a story. The great thing for me about comic book characters and comics in general is that there's a heightened reality, which is what Broadway's all about, and that's what musicals should have. So it should work, but it doesn't seem to.
As an expert in the field, would you think that what the major problem is with Spider-Man, and this is my opinion because I have no clue about this, but this is just my opinion. I find that when you try to over-sensationalize something, you go you go right into the dumper. Sometimes it works, but in the case of a Broadway play, I feel that less would have been more here, which would have meant less delays, less, you know, you can get your idea across. If it's well written, you can get your idea across with the pen and the paper rather than all these technical, you know. And I feel that that was its downfall. All the technology or the special effects. What do you feel about that?
Well, let's see. We have, just to remind you, if you wish to call into the program, the phone number is 1-631-888-8811, and we do have a caller. Good evening.
Good evening.
And this is?
This is Hassan.
Hassan.
Oh, hey, Hassan. How you doing?
How are you? We're sorry you're not here physically, but we're glad you're here more than just in spirit, but also in voice. What's up?
Not much. I'm just I'm calling in like I promised. I know I'm stuck on assignment at the moment, so I'm just chiming in to lend moral support. Everything sounds great from this end, though, by the way.
Oh, cool. Good to hear. Good to hear.
That's great. Does that mean I have a permanent position here?
I'm not the one to talk to you about that.
Always the diplomat.
Dear God.
Anyway, so...
you guys
Hassan,
are talking about Spider-Man?
Yeah.
At the moment, yes.
Yeah, you were listening in on that where I was saying I think they went a little too crazy and less would have been more. And I believe if they used less, they would have opened on time. What do you think?
I don't know. When you have a Broadway show and you're charging something, what is it? Something $100 a ticket?
The tickets can go as high as $320, and that's previews.
Right.
That's previews, and they're going to go up if the thing ever opens.
So you have that huge amount, and people are going to go expecting a grand spectacle, you know, and. I guess the mentality is that they want to give as spectacular a show as possible to justify why you would go to spend about $300, potentially $300 on something that if you waited for the movie to come out, you'd only have to spend $20, and get genuine special effects and all kinds of other stuff like that. So, you know, they're fighting with the medium. You know, the medium is limited because it's live. So they're trying to compete with Hollywood on Broadway. I guess that's why it's they're over momenticizing everything.
Well, you figure with a budget like that, they would get to hire people who knew what they were doing, like tying a rope onto somebody so they won't fall. just my opinion, folks. Go ahead.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean. You're going to waste time using logic, though.
That's right. I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
You know, a number of years ago, I don't remember who the conductor was, but a classical music conductor wrote an article I read basically saying that with the advent of higher-tech home audio equipment, that people were expecting a louder, more fulfilled musical experience, sound experience when they went to the concert hall. And if they weren't getting it, they wouldn't come and spend the extra money to sit in a concert hall to listen to a live performance. They'd rather listen at home. And what he ended up doing, his name escapes me, sorry, was to make the orchestra play louder in the concert hall to try and recreate what people were hearing at home. I think your point is well taken. I think what a lot of Broadway producers, directors are doing is trying to recreate a bigger-than-life experience that, of course, you can get on the flat screen or the 3D screen on the Broadway stage. And technologically, it's a whole different ballgame in terms of trying to make it as big and as spectacular. It's succeeded many, many times at many shows. Phantom, I think, is one of them, one of many. But it's a big challenge because you're dealing in a different with a different medium.
I think the potential here was for something really spectacular. Julie Taymor talked about trying to innovate. But when I saw, again, 2 years ago, she talked about, well, we're still trying to figure out how to make Spider-Man fly. Well, you know what? As one of the critics said, they made Mary Martin fly as Peter Pan. And before Mary Martin, Peter Pan flew in the beginning of the 20th century. So flying itself is not a big deal. It's that they're trying to make the flying so spectacular and so dangerous that that takes away from the story. But again, there isn't much of a story. The script itself doesn't offer anything. And I think one of the problems I was on when I was just going through my own information today to see how many successful Broadway shows there are based on comics and comic books. The single most successful show ever based on a comic character was Annie. And Annie was on a comic book. Annie was this little girl who was in a comic strip, and the timing of Annie was great because it's about the Depression, and it was in the 70s when, particularly in New York, the economy was horrible and the world was horrible, and there's good old positive Annie who's going to say, everything's going to be great tomorrow, everything's going to be great tomorrow, and son of a gun, everything was great tomorrow.
Well, you know, if I may interrupt, Annie as a character, unlike a superhero, was literally and figuratively down to earth. You didn't
Absolutely.
Have to worry about flying, you didn't have to worry about the high technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but Annie also had a script. And
You want everything, a script too, huh?
Well, I think everyone would be a lot more forgiving of lack of spectacle if the story was at all intriguing. And from what I'm hearing, this Charlie's not the first person that I haven't seen the play, so I'm going to refrain from actually judging the play. But I know a couple of people who have seen it, and they all say it's besides the wire work, which they don't have together, the story is almost non-existent. So I think maybe people might forgive lack of spectacular stunt if they had something to latch on to story-wise or intellectually.
That's what I'm talking about.
And there's a lot of meat on Spider-Man. I mean, it doesn't have to all be show. Spider-Man anybody who knows the Spider-Man story, it's a pretty engaging story. It's nothing you haven't heard before. I mean, it's got a radioactive spiders and all kinds of other weird stuff like that. But if you really pay attention, you really get into the struggle of the main character, mm-hmm. Peter Parker. You could fill a play with a lot of useful emotion without necessarily having to throw someone off a roof.
Right. Yeah, it's almost Shakespearean sometimes. It just goes back to something I was talking about off air. If it's not on a page, it's not on the stage. Also, I would tend to think that superheroes would make very poor material for Broadway stage because there's nothing to do with wireworks and so forth. It can't be done better with movie special effects and CGI. If you want to have heroes, comic heroes on Broadway, you'd probably do far, far better with costume heroes like Batman or Green Hornet or the Spirit, basic ordinary mortals who don't have any superheroes and just put on a costume and go out and fight evil anyway, because then you don't have to have the super special effects and you more limit the need for different sets and so forth, because just special effects don't do it. I mean, there was a flop a few years ago. I forget the name of it, but it was involving this was before Thomas the Tank Engine. It involved railroad cars, and they had the involved railroad trains, and they had the actors dressed up to look like locomotives and skating all through the theater, and it flopped because the plot was not there.
Yeah,
was,
actually, Starlight Express was inspired by Thomas the Tank Engine, of all things. And people went to see, because they were roller skating, people wanted to see them fall. And that's why people are spending $250 to go to a preview of Spider-Man because they want to see somebody get hurt. There is no story. There's this whole thing about Arachne, who is the original spider, and it's this whole side story that Julie Taymor has thrown at. Julie Taymor has taken book credit for this. She shouldn't mess with the original story. So the focus is not on Peter. Peter Parker is a perfect Broadway character because he's got the angst, he's got all of these things going on in his life, and it would be great, as I said, it could have been the boys' version of Wicked, about how hard it is to be a boy, how hard it is to be in high school, how hard it is to take these responsibilities. It's not happening because the story's not there.
NHL fans, maybe it's time to bring the hockey teams to Broadway, and we'll watch the fights, and whoever falls, people will pay for that. No, it's a bad idea.
That's why you go to the game.
But I do think, you know, going back to Spider-Man, the whole thing with the cables, maybe they just thought it the wrong way. They should have gone back to what you, Charlie, you talked about in the news, about that water-propelled device that would fly him around the stage.
Yeah.
I think they should have just
Spider-Man meets Aquaman.
They should just turn that aspect of the show over to Cirque du Soleil, because nobody does it better than they do.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. You know, I'd looked... done a little research and found there were a number of shows based on comic book characters, not just superheroes, but just to run down the name of a few. We mentioned a few already, Superman, Spider-Man, Annie, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on a very popular comic strip and very successful. Matter of fact, there were two shows. There was another one called Snoopy, which I know a little less about, Little Abner. There even was a Broadway show in development back in 2002 that never got produced, although I hear from my readings that... there is a production going on now in Britain. It's not a Broadway-type show, but it could be developed into one down the road. Is there a future for a show beyond Spider-Man, other comic book characters? I mean, we have so many superheroes that might just be bigger than life and spectacular enough to be a Broadway show.
Getting back to horror, Dracula went very well. The Phantom of the Opera, very well, because there's a story and nobody's messing with it. They may have changed it to update it, but it's still the same basis. Like Jessica was saying, this director changed the whole thing. This is about a high school kid. There's more stories in a high school kid. Why are you changing it? This is what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about rewriting a book. And me and Hassan were going, rewriting a book. No, it's not going to happen. But here I see more evidence of people trying to do that. And once you do that, you're screwing around. This is your version. Nobody wants to see your version. You know, we're used to one thing. Somebody sees Spider-Man, they want to go see Peter Parker. They want to go see what they know as Spider-Man, not your version of what you think it should be. You know, so... when they did Dracula, when they did Phantom of the Opera, they're big successes because people went to see Dracula. They kind of knew what it was about, and they got what they, and more, because they were spectacular. So what are you doing with Spider-Man? Go, Jessica.
Well, you know, what I'd like to do with Spider-Man in its current incarnation is just forget about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a success. It's been panned. It's going to be this decade's Cats. This is what the tourists are going to come to New York to see. And it's going to be successful. Are they going to make back their $65 million investment? I don't know, and honestly, I do not care.
Maybe.
You know, when I think about somebody who wrote about, you know, $65 million, that's the entire NEA budget.
Right.
And what more we could have done with it. But I have a theory about why... in all of the musicals that have been produced, and they were actually, from the research that I found, they were actually writing musicals based on comic strip characters as far back as 1896. Victor Herbert composed for shows based on comic strips, including Little Nemo, which is one of the early science fiction things.
Absolutely.
I love Little Nemo. And he wrote music for Little Nemo, so it can work. But the successful ones, I've counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that are even moderately successful. And I'm including the Addams Family, which I don't even want to start talking about how awful I thought that was. But, you know, people are enjoying it, so that's fine. That's Annie. That's... Charlie Brown, which actually had a lousy track record on Broadway. It ran for almost 2,000 performances off Broadway. They moved it to Broadway. It closed after like 24 performances, and then it didn't really do well until it was revived in the 1990s. It's a Bird, It's a Plane, Superman, which you mentioned, only ran for 130 performances. And Little Abner, which was which opened in 56 and ran for almost 700 performances, which back then was a very, very respectable run. The reason Little Abner worked is because Little Abner as a comic strip was very political. And the show is very political. And the characters are true to it. I mean, I don't know how well it would play today, but they were these wonderful, really over-the-top characters. And that worked really, really well. My theory is comic books, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but comic books, the way I see it, is mostly a male genre. The guys, more guys are really, really into particularly superheroes.
Oh, we can see that idea.
Well, that's been my experience, and if I'm wrong, it's okay. Except for Wonder Woman, who I kind of dig Wonder Woman myself.
That's mostly male too.
Yeah,
you got that
my
right.
My father's favorite. and honestly, musicals are more. I don't want to say more. That's more for women, but they're more. It's more of a feminine kind of an art.
I would agree with that.
And comic books. They just don't seem to attract the kind of attention. I think the one that Alan was talking about that around 2002, between 1998 and 2004, there was in the works a Batman musical.
Right, that's the one I was referring to.
Interestingly, the music for that was being written by Jim Steinman, who wrote "Bat Out of Hell" for Meatloaf. So it could have been really, really interesting. But what happened was that the Batman movies. This was after the first couple of Tim Burton movies, and they were talking about maybe having Tim Burton direct this on Broadway. Although Burton claims he never had anything whatsoever to do with it, and he wouldn't touch it at all. But then the next group of Batman movies came out, and the whole tone of the Batman movies changed, and they darkened, and they, you know, and so Batman as a musical just didn't seem to click.
Clearly, you didn't see Batman and Robin.
No.
The movie or the TV series?
We won't even talk about that one. But there was, in the mid-80s, they were trying to bring Captain America to the stage as a musical. Stan Lee himself was writing a musical based on Thor called The Reckoner. I don't know whatever happened to that. And that would have been interesting because it would have been in Stan Lee's hands. But the ones that work are gentler, they're a little more kid friendly, like Annie, like You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. The Addams Family works because it's completely absurd, and it's at least it pays a little bit of an homage to the TV show, which everyone loved, and a little bit of an homage to the original Addams cartoons. I love the idea of comic books as sources for musicals, but it's got to be handled carefully. It has to be true to the original material for it to really work. And yeah, some of them do fly. Well, so does Mary Poppins, and nobody falls there. So, you know, it's a matter of how you handle it.
Are you saying that, in your opinion, for something to work on Broadway or as a musical in general, it has to have a strong family aspect?
No, absolutely not. I don't think that's the case. But I think that just based on those comic characters who have worked, have had a stronger appeal to families than the ones that haven't worked.
As Jessica could tell, anyone who was willing to listen, I'm not always a great fan of Broadway musicals. I think I deal with fantasy a little bit indirectly. I'm more, I guess, in terms of dealing with reality. And I'm wondering if part of the problem is because all of the productions that you had mentioned that were successful comic book to Broadway transitions, or adaptations, I suppose is the word, were not superheroes. I have a theory or two as to why, but I'm wondering either Charlie or Hassan or Tom, why superheroes don't seem to make it as successfully on Broadway as these other comic book characters do.
Well, like I said before, you need greater special effects than you can provide on the theater. You need to open it up more than you can do in a theater, and. Truthfully, it's you just really need the screen. And like I said, and everything I've heard just bears out everything that I was thinking. Incidentally, I would take a little bit of issue with the idea that musicals are mostly for women. I'd think the MGM-type musicals are. But if you start talking about like the Warner Brothers ones, like West Side Story, Oklahoma, South Pacific, those I think have a definite masculine element.
And a good book also, well written.
And an excellent book, mm-hmm. which again goes back to what I said before, not on the page, not on the stage.
Absolutely.
And also I'm thinking nothing is greater than one's imagination. And when you read a book, you create that scene. And you have an idea until you see a movie what that scene looks like. Also, if I'm reading a comic book about a superhero, I see that page. I see what that artist has drawn, and then I go to a play, and then I see that superhero with strings on him. You know, you know he's going to need the strings to fly. But there you're seeing it, and already that takes your imagination down a notch and stuff like that. Not saying that you want the guy to fly without strings, but when you go there, what do you expect? Nobody flies, okay? You need strings. You need something, you know? So that's why I think it doesn't work well there, because first we have our imagination, and then we see it written in the comic books, and then we go and we see it live, it's not going to be as spectacular as what we thought or what we read. Whereas if we go to the theater, yes, it will. The movies, yes, it will be, because they have the time to get it right, you know? So that's my opinion why they don't. That's sort of me answering your question.
And related to that, interestingly enough, one of the people I read much of over the years, Marshall McLuhan, who was a media theorist
over the years, who talked
about how we interact with the media and how we are creating the media.
The media is the massage.
Right. Yes. And the media and how the media manipulates us. Based on what you just said, Charlie, one of his quotes is, "It is the framework which changes with each new technology and not just the picture within the frame." I think that relates to what you're saying, but you have to understand when you go to a Broadway show, and I think a lot of people are disappointed. They've seen the movie, and they expect to see a live reproduction of the movie, and it's not. The word is not reproduction. It's an adaptation. It's been changed. Right. In the same way, a movie is not the same as reading a color comic book, which is a very, very different and more intimate experience.
And the way that's going to be a hit is if you can accept the change. An example with this is I loved the movie. Now, this is going back. I loved the play Grease. I loved the movie Grease. I loved them all. I went back and saw the play and the movie several times.
I love eating Grease.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Sometimes. But I'm saying if the adaptation, is good enough, then you can accept it. Anybody can accept it. You know, so
yeah. Keep in mind, the play Grease came before the movie Grease.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
I know.
Also another one I'd like to point out is a play that's on now, a very male-oriented musical, Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
Probably the most outstanding example of the art.
Or Million Dollar Quartet.
There you go. There's another one.
There you go.
And just another couple of Marshall McLuhan quotes for you.
Sure.
He said that all of man's inventions so far, at least the basic ones, have increased some aspect of his physical body. The wheel increases the leg, the camera, the eye, and so forth. He said that what makes our age different is electronic circuitry expands the mind.
There you go.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
So, Jessica.
Sir.
Go ahead. Continue on with this analogy about what do you think is going to save Spider-Man? I mean, people are going to see it just like they go to a certain coffee shop that has bad coffee, but because everybody goes there, they go there and drink it and accept it, even though they know it's bad coffee, but everybody's doing it. Is that why Spider-Man is going to be a hit?
It's going to be – I don't know if it's necessary. It depends on your definition of hit. Is it going to run for a while? Yeah. It's the same thing I said when I went to see Adam's Family. I said I knew I was doomed from the very beginning when during the overture they started playing the theme music from the television show and people were snapping along and humming along.
Yeah.
I said, I'm in a lot of trouble. And then the greatest moment in the entire evening was when Fester put the light bulb in his mouth and it lit up, because this is what people want. This is what people expect.
Yeah.
And this is what they're going to get. They're going to get what they expect. And I think that's going to make it work. Miss Saigon, the whole thing was not about it. It was a great story. I mean, I can't listen to that show in the car because I start to cry and I can't drive.
Right.
But it was all about the helicopter. Big deal. They landed a helicopter.
So, you know,
it's going to give people what they want. Is it great? Is it great theater? I don't think so. But,
okay. You
know, that's just my opinion.
Thank you so much. A very valid opinion.
I think the bottom line here is that if Spider-Man doesn't work, there are so many more superhero comic book characters that we still have the potential for finally writing a good Broadway show. I'd like to just close with just one last question, yes or no. Do you think there ever will be a major successful Broadway show based on a superhero? And if yes is the answer, can you give me the name of who you might suggest might make a good character basis for a superhero Broadway show?
Oh, Hassan, why don't you take that one?
Oh, me?
I want to see a Wonder Woman musical.
No, that would be fabulous.
I think that would work.
So would I.
we got 1 minute left. And any last thoughts, Hassan?
I agree with it's going to sound messed up. I agree with everything you say. You know, I do believe that the plays are probably more intimate, and that's why they don't work. Superheroes don't work. Superheroes are as a rule not as intimate.
Okay.
You know, it's about iconicism and, you know, far off beings doing things we can't do. So we can't really have an intimate insight into them.
Hassan, I want to thank you. I apologize. I'm going to have to cut in and thank everybody for listening in tonight. Charlie, Tom, and of course, Jessica, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. We will see you next week on It Came From
the Radio.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.